The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericahealth.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live Internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Welcome to Spread Your Wings and Fly into Health with your host, Jennifer Tolo. Our discussion on the show today is based on real life, real situations, and most importantly, real people, just like you. Our goal is to help you live a healthier and happier life. Now, here is your host, Jen Tolo.
Good morning and welcome to Spread Your Wings and Fly into Health. I'm your host, Jen Tolo, RN, owner of Butterfly Family Wellness. I'm really excited to share with you my passion and my experience with holistic health care and preventative care, proactive care, and ways in which you can take charge of your health. I've learned through being a mom, through being a critical care nurse, and then later on in my journey in holistic health and integrative medicine, different tips and different things that work, at least for me and my family and some of the clients that I work with. So I'm happy to share those with you. Today, we're going to be talking about grief and the various phases of grief, various forms of grief, and how to work through the process to help you fly into health and lead a purposeful life. Last week, our show covered the issue of death and illness, and especially the death and illness of a child and how that can affect the health and well-being of siblings and family unit. We really had more of a spirituality focus, focusing on if you store the feelings, what that stored feeling can do to somebody as far as creating illness and disease. We talked about the importance of love and feeling purposeful to move through. And I wanted to follow up that discussion with more in-depth on the grieving process and the phases of grief, as well as the different kinds of grief, as grief related to death is different from grief related to illness or grief related to a disability or a change in reality. So I'm bringing in Glenn Lord from the Grief Toolbox. He's worked through the sorrow of the grieving process when he lost his son 14 years ago as a result of a medical error after a tonsillectomy. Glenn is the co-founder of the Grief Toolbox, and he's the executive producer of Walking Through Grief, which is a series on grief. I want to welcome Glenn Lord to the show. Welcome, Glenn.
Oh, thank you, Jen. Welcome. Thank you for having me on the show today.
Oh, I'm glad. I'm very glad. I felt last week was a great show, and talking with Bernie Siegel, we had a lot of discussions about spirituality and butterflies and sort of a lot in the process of stored grief and what that can do. But I really felt like it was important to touch on the actual grieving process. And I'm really excited to have you here because I'm sorry to hear that you've had to go through this process with yourself when your son died. Can you talk about that journey?
Sure. My son Noah died in 1999 from complications of a tonsillectomy, and it's been a long journey. And with that, I've learned a lot about grief. I've been involved in a lot of different areas and done a lot of different education through the process. But really, I think the main thing is a lot of what, you know, you talk about what Bernie Siegel spoke of, but really in a broader sense, what he was speaking of is continuing bonds.
Right.
And I think that really the biggest aspect of we don't heal in grief. Grief is a healing process. It's really a lifelong journey. But
yes.
A lot of that journey is understanding how those continuing bonds do connect. And they're different for different people. Some people experience signs. Some people do not. That has nothing to do with the love that you felt for the individual who died or your connection with them. It is just we're all different people and we experience things differently. But we all do find ways to have those continuing bonds with our loved ones. And for me, a lot of it has been honoring Noah through a lot of the work that I do, whether it be with the Compassionate Friends or with the Grief Toolbox or with a variety of other ways that I am very much involved with the lives of grieving people, whether they lost a child or any other loved one. It's grief is based in love, so it really doesn't right. matter who the individual was.
Absolutely. I was reading the book Scarlett Lewis wrote called Nurturing Healing Love after the Sandy Hook shootings.
Mm-hmm.
And I wrote down a couple of things that just really stuck with me. And she was saying that Dr. Laura, when she came to work with her, she said grieving is a sacred act and we must respect it and treat it as such. And many clergy have talked about grieving being exactly what you said, love and healing, that death is actually healing. And it sounds like that's what you're talking about as far as, you know, the process of grieving is really love and understanding that love.
It is, but it's also being honest with yourself and feeling all of the different emotions
mm-hmm.
and recognizing that those emotions can come up at any time. I mean, at
this
time, I'm, you know, more than a decade since my son died, but there are things that can trigger me and bring me right back to those first days. And you don't necessarily, you come to know what some of them are going to be, but others of them come out of the blue because
right.
the connection is still always there and the rawness, the missing part is always going to be there. The joy returns, the hope returns, the fullness of life returns, and the joy and the pain, they dance together. But you learn how to let the joy lead a lot more.
Yeah, absolutely. I was also reading, I don't know if you follow Marianne Williamson, but I was reading her Everyday Grace. She has a chapter on grief. And she was talking about love and how losing a love that mattered to me taught me how to love in a way that I never would have known. So, and she also mentioned about how she sort of realized how much she loved her sister, and that's who she was grieving. And that love, she really wished that she had spent more time understanding that love and allowing that love instead of focusing on the differences through life. So, and I can imagine certain things that would bring up something with a loved one that would trigger something. And as you said numerous times in our discussions about grief, grieving is different for everybody.
Yes, yes. Everybody has their own journey. There is no one way for it. There's as many ways to grieve as there are people who are grieving.
Yeah.
And as long as you're not hurting yourself or others, then you're on the right journey and you're going to do it at your pace, and that's the right way to go.
Absolutely. Well, before we get into the phases of grief, I was curious as to what exactly inspired you to start the Grief Toolbox and to start this journey. I don't know if you could share a little bit about what your background was and then how this sort of changed your path.
Okay. Well, when Noah died, I was in marketing and sales and was in sales management, and that's kind of where my background is marketing and sales and bringing things to people, and I was working in a large Fortune 500 company and at a senior level position in the organization. And that's kind of where my life goal was. When I was young, my aspiration was to run a Fortune 500 company. That's what I had set my goal out when I was, you know, and I wrote my goals out when I was 20 years old and believed in, you know, one day, 1 month, 1 year, 5 year, 10 year plans and had all of the pieces mapped out. And that's the direction I was headed in terms of where my life was going to go. And when my son died, a lot of what I thought was important in life no longer seemed so important. I continued in the sales management world and did that for another couple of years and continued to grow in that, but I was always constantly being pulled into wanting to have more meaning in my life. And one of the struggles we had, our son died in 1999, and the internet had been around for quite a while then, although most people didn't know about it, and it wasn't very easy to find grief information. A lot of it, there was, you know, you'd go to the bookstore and there'd be a small little shelf at the bottom down there, and you could pick out 10 or 12 books, but all of the information wasn't in one easy place. And so really the goal of the Grief Toolbox was to take all different things grief, whether it be, you know, information, whether it be artwork, whether it be articles, whether it be resources, and really try to find one single clearinghouse where mm-hmm. people can find whatever's going to work for them for their journey, because you just don't have the energy to look everywhere to find it. And that was really the kind
right.
of inspiration behind the Grief Toolbox.
And sometimes people are throwing things at you during the grieving process, like, oh, well, you should do this or you should do this. And it's hard to sort of sift through that. So I can imagine this is a wonderful thing for people grieving, because they can sort of sift through on their own and at their leisure and when they're ready.
Yes, and that should is that should is something that I think we in the grief world, there's a kind of a saying that says don't should on me. Mm. And we as grievers, I think, tend to become very astute to that reality fairly quickly. We don't want people to tell us what to do. Mm-hmm. But I think one of the bigger struggles that actually happens in the grief journey is we should on ourselves from our own history of how we've dealt with life, from how we've seen things in the past. We decide for us this is the way things should be. And the truth is it's how do you want things to be? I mean, you have to make choices, and whether or not your choice, it's okay. People say, well, I should stay in my house. I should make a big change. Well, not necessarily. These are all things that there's no one right answer, and you have to look at it for yourself, but don't should on yourself. Do what's right in your heart.
Right, and everybody's individual. What works for some people don't work for another person. So absolutely, it's really sort of listening to yourself and understanding what your needs are. And, this is different, but I remember just with illness, I had a son that was diagnosed with leukemia, and going through that, I had all sorts of people coming and offering me advice and offering me all sorts of resources. And it was overwhelming because you're just kind of reeling and dealing with your diagnosis or trying to sift through that. And I think that really tapping into what I knew I had solid, and then what I knew I needed help with was important. And then on my own, going out and asking for, okay, this is what I need. I remember reaching out to somebody and saying, okay, how do I help my other kids through this? What do I do for my other kids? And then I remember going to another person saying, okay, walk me through the process of this treatment. So it's important, I think, and this is what I'm picking up from what you're saying, is to really know what your needs are and know that your journey through grief is going to be different than somebody else's journey through grief, and that there is no right way to go through.
Yes, and I think you also hit upon another really key element right there, though, when you talked about the fact that you took the time to realize where you needed help, and you took the time to reach out to others, whether they be people you already knew or people you needed to find, but you took the time to reach out to those others. Oftentimes, those people who we've had in our lives before aren't the ones that are going to be there for us. And we oftentimes have to find new people. But to have that strength to not isolate, to recognize, here's where I need help, and I'm going to go find help, even if that means that I need to, make new friends or gain new information or join new organizations, that's really a big key to it, too. So that, I think, was something you had done, which was also a big element to people's growth.
Yeah. A really good friend of mine 2 years ago lost her husband to cancer. And I remember being there for her. And I wouldn't say we got closer through this. I don't think we were terribly close before. I was actually closer to her husband. And when her husband passed, I remember saying to her, wait till the dust settles and, look around, and those are the people that are going to be there for you and will be there for you. Because people come up, I think, during death or the death or the illness of a loved one. All sorts of people come because I think generally in a community society, people want to help. People want to be there. People can empathize. But your friendships, like you had said, will change because some people are not comfortable dealing with the death. They don't know what to say. They don't know what to do. So they keep a distance. And then there are others that maybe have been through this or who kind of can empathize with you and can give you that support that you tend to maybe lean on a little bit more or create new friendships with. So I think that you're right. I think that's a really good point as far as, not being stuck with or derailed by what we knew in the past.
Yeah, and I think also, one of the realities of the grief journey is we have the opportunity to become teachers for those in our lives. I think that, you've talked about different reasons why people fall out of our lives. And I think that we have a lot of people, most of the people in our lives, I think, love us, care about us, they're connected with us, and they want to help, but they have no idea even what that word help means. They don't have a clue where to begin with that. And many of them, if we are willing to take the time to educate them, want to be educated. That doesn't mean there aren't all of them. Sometimes we have to respect ourselves enough to remove some people from our lives that, you know, our place in life has changed. But a lot of them, if we are willing to educate them, they want to learn and they want to help us. They just don't even know what that means.
Yes, I completely agree with you. Well, when we get back from the break, I do want to talk about your project-based therapy a little bit, just because I feel like this grief toolbox and the things that you've done from the death of your child are really project-based and seem to be a way for you to sort of work through and lead a more purposeful life based on your loss. I think I shared with everybody the last show, and I did share with you, we had a death of a child, 16-year-old boy in my town, very sweet, wonderful kid. Still not sure the circumstances exactly around his death. Some say suicide, some say it was an accident. But I wanted to share with everybody when we got back about the project that some of the teens in my town have done as a way to remember him and as a way to sort of keep his spirit going. And I know that on your website you have a birdhouse project from a gentleman, Chris, who has lost his son. Is that right?
Chris Munch, and he developed the birdhouse project, which is, people think it's kind of a, it is about building birdhouses, but it's not. It's really about rebuilding yourself. And it's
yes.
the journey of building a birdhouse to help you to come to grips with what did you lose? What did you not lose? What are your goals? What strengths do you have? What supports do you have? And help you kind of put all of these places together in a way that isn't so intimidating to really work through it. And it also is very hands oriented. A lot of people need to have that combination of hand and mind to be able to stimulate their thought process. And the Birdhouse Project is very successful. Very popular among men and especially teenagers and things where they don't naturally want to sit and share their feelings, but they still have the feelings just as deep as anyone else.
Yes. So you can go onto Glenn's website, thegrieftoolbox.com, and you can look on for more information about that. You can, during the break, take a look at my website, www.butterflyfamilywellness.com. Feel free to connect with me. You can connect with Glenn on his website through LinkedIn and Twitter and Facebook. When we get back from the break, I would like to share with you the project that I had mentioned the teens doing in my town. And I would also like to get into the phases of grief and some more project-based therapy. So we will be back after this break. Thank you.
Your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
Spread your wings and fly into health with Butterfly Family Wellness. We offer customized healthy living plans for adults, children, schools, and communities. This includes various levels of personal coaching, holistic health counseling, cooking classes, workshops, Reiki healings, and attunements. Call 978-290-1938 or visit butterflyfamilywellness.com to take a personalized approach to family health and well-being and take control of your health. Visit butterflyfamilywellness.com or call 978-290-1938 today.
If you have cancer, there are a lot of questions that need to be answered. While many medical professionals can give us some of the answers, there are many more unanswered questions that can't always be answered to our satisfaction. Listen for Cancer Concepts and Compliments with Dr. James Belanger. We'll discuss the tests, the compromised immune system, how cancer grows, and what natural medicines could be added to conventional therapies that may help keep it at bay. Cancer Concepts and Compliments airs live every Tuesday at 9 a.m. Eastern Time, 6 a.m. Pacific on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel.
Think you've seen everything there is to see in online television? Let us surprise you. Visit voiceamerica.tv today for sports, health, business, and more on demand 24/7.
are listening to Spread Your Wings and Fly into Health. To reach Jennifer Tolo or her guest expert today, please call into our show at 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. Now, let's get back to the program.
Hi, welcome back to Spread Your Wings and Fly into Health. I'm Jen Tolo, your host, and I am joined by Glenn Lord from the Grief Toolbox. Glenn and I are talking about or discussing grief and the process of grieving. We were just talking about project-based therapy as a way for some people to work through the grieving process. And Glenn had mentioned men and teens seem to do best with that or seem to really do well with that. I had mentioned the death of a boy in my town, a very sweet boy, friends with one of my sons. And he had died over, actually, Columbus Day. And I came home yesterday, and my kids were getting ready to carve pumpkins, and I see this red, glowing red pumpkin on my doorstep. And I thought, what the heck is this? Where did this come from? And I walked up to it, and at first I didn't really understand what it was, but it had initials on it. I'm not going to go into the initials, but it had initials on it. And then it dawned on me it was this boy's initials, the boy who had passed. And I talked to a couple of my neighbors. I said, did you get a red pumpkin on your doorstep? And they said, oh, yeah. Some of the boys in town, some of this boy's friends came together. And I guess at school they had, the boy always liked to wear red skinny jeans. And so they had wear red for, and his last name started with an R, wear red for this boy at school. And then they painted the pumpkins red. He also had very red hair. So red is the color and the symbol for this boy in memoriam of this boy. And so everybody around in our neighborhood and friends of his have red pumpkins with his initials on their doorstep to remember him for Halloween. I thought that was really special.
That is wonderful. That's a great way. A great way, especially to pull the whole community together, because I think there is also, in addition to individual grief, I think there's a group grief, especially when you have a public event, you know, like you had in your town there. It brings up a lot of other grief memories for other individuals, and the town itself needs to go through a healing process.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you had said that this is very typical for boys and men as far as wanting to do something physical. And I see that with my oldest son, who was friends with this boy. At first there was talk about Yik Yak and wanting to go after Yik Yak because this boy was said to be bullied on Yik Yak. So my son was, you know, I want to go after Yik Yak and I want to, you know, do all this stuff. And I feel like that is definitely his reaction to things sometimes, which is probably typical teen, typical boy. But I find my husband's like that too. He's more of a doer and wants to take action and wants to feel purposeful in that way.
I think that's very, very true. I mean, I think that it, by nature, you know, men are problem solvers and we want to solve the problem. And this isn't a problem that can be solved, but we also then go into the physical activity. And a lot of the what's released through tears is also released in sweat. And so a lot of the concepts that people, that the men do, it really is to have that chance to kind of work through. And while they're doing that, their mind is actually working through a lot of their grief process. You know, and I think that that's a wonderful way to do it, especially when you have a group project like that. Sometimes having a group activity of, you know, building a playground for in memory of some
yes.
of someone or something of that
yeah.
nature, where you guys can all physically do something, or even as simple as just going out and mowing the lawn can be a part of the grief journey.
Right. Actually, there was a family in town that lost a mom, and instead of flowers or anything, they wanted people to come and help build a playground. So that's what a friend of mine did. That was great. And then we did a basketball memoriam for my other friend's husband who passed away, who was very into basketball. We did a big tournament. So I definitely understand how the projects, and I can see how the project-based therapy helps with the community and maybe with the individual. But as far as sort of the initial phase of grief, what would that be? Is that just working through the sadness? I'm trying to remember from my nursing and counseling.
Kubler-Ross does have five stages of grief, but I think it's important to note that when she was originally writing those griefs, she was actually looking at the dying process. And so her five stages are denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and acceptance are the five stages.
Right.
And when someone is dying, they are a fairly linear process, although not completely so. But when we're grieving, it's a completely, look at it as almost like a circular journey, and put all of these elements on the journey, and you could jump from denial to bargaining to acceptance to depression all in the same minute.
Right.
In the very beginning, we're absolutely in shock. You can't, and that's true no matter, even if you've had someone with a long-term illness, and you know, you may have had years to prepare all of your, you know, legal things and everything else, and you may have all of those things in place, but the heart can't prepare. No matter, the mind can, and you can do all of those practical things, but the heart still can't. And so shock is one of going to be where someone is in the beginning, and even the simple act of getting out of bed can be not a simple act in the beginning of the grief journey. As we go through, we do start to thaw, and we start to actually feel more of those feelings. And it can be more painful, actually, as the journey goes on for the first year or two. And again, there aren't any timelines. This isn't, you know, to say this is the way it works, because some people this could be months, other people this could be many, many years. But in those early times, we do start to thaw, and we start to feel more of these things, and we start to be hit more with the reality of it. And in a lot of ways, we can feel worse. And a lot of that is our mind protecting us in the very beginning from allowing us to feel everything. I think if we felt everything all at once, as much as it feels like it's crushing, it would be infinitely more crushing. So it's a protection mechanism our mind has to allow us to feel that as we open up to it and we continue to go through that.
Do you think that if you, like, let's say for somebody who is dying of whether it's cancer or maybe there's something that happens and the person's in the intensive care unit and they're, you know, somehow you know that sort of death is coming, or you are thinking that death is coming and people are preparing for death. Do you think that sometimes that can help with the grieving process if it started early and you can resolve some things and you can plan and you can, or does that not necessarily have a big bearing on the process? Versus, I guess what I'm saying is, like, somebody who loses somebody suddenly out of the blue, you know, or the grieving process for something where you kind of, you knew it was coming. You had almost time to prepare in a little bit, in a way.
Well, there's two pieces of that. One is, if someone in your life is in a long-term illness situation and you know they're dying, that is a grief all of its own. And there are many griefs that are occurring through that. And so you are actively dealing with all of the emotions of that grief that doesn't necessarily yet have to do with the fact that they've died. So you're going to go through a dual grief process. You'll have the grieving the entire time while they are dying. Mm-hmm. And then after they die, you will have the grief of their death, which may include things like the grief of your identity may be gone. If you're a full-time caregiver and you're, you know, 14, 16 hours a day, this is what you do. And then one morning you wake up and there is no pills to give. You know, there is no bed sheets to change. Right. There is no food to give to someone. You know, who are you? And that loss of identity can be something that you're going to have to struggle with. Mm-hmm. So I think in some ways the answer is absolutely not. You're going to feel all of this. In some ways, yes. I mean, you have time to put the will in place. You have time to decide, you know, who is going to get what. You may have a chance and time to say things that, you know, you've been meaning to say, and now you have an opportunity to say them. So some of those practical things, yes, there's absolutely. But from an emotional standpoint, not really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can see that. I have a dear friend of mine who is going through this with her mom right now, and her mom has been put in palliative care and in hospice and very organized. She's got a terrific blog. Her mother has an amazing blog that she's been writing through her. She's got peritoneal cancer. And I hope that she's going to put this book together or something just to help people, because she's just a woman with amazing grace and amazing perspective. But one of the things that my friend was saying is she's able to have some conversations with her mom that she didn't always kind of felt that she had time. She'd put off. And it really forced her to have some conversations and express her love, express her appreciation, because she didn't want to regret not having said certain things to her mom. So, but she's still, horribly, very sad. Her mom is still with us, but she's just, she's thinking about and anticipating when her mom is not physically with us anymore, and that makes her very sad.
Yeah. And that guilt and regret is a major part of many people's grief journeys. Not everyone. Again, we're all different.
Mm-hmm.
But guilt and regret is a major part of many people's grief journeys. And some of the guilt is legitimate. Some of it we own. Oftentimes we don't own it, and we take responsibility for things that weren't ours to take responsibility for. And a lot of what we do through the grief process is work through that guilt and regret. And one of the biggest regrets people have is they say, I never got to say goodbye to them, is one of the biggest regrets.
Mm.
And a dear friend of mine, Darcy Sims, she had a wonderful way of expressing that. And she would say to the individual, if you knew that this was the last time you were going to see someone, is, goodbye what you'd want to say to them? And more than likely not. More than likely what you'd want to say to them is, I love you. And more than likely the individual knew you loved them and you knew you loved them, and more than likely you said that to them hundreds if not thousands of times in your life. And so that message is there. And if you want to, I believe the universe hears them. I mean, I believe you could go out and tell your loved one that you love them, even if they're not physically present with
Absolutely.
You. And I believe they hear you in that process.
I believe that as well. Absolutely. It's funny, but being a critical care nurse, a lot of times we keep, especially patients on ventilators, we keep them sort of sedated and comfortable. So they're not, because being obviously ventilated is an uncomfortable process. So we keep them ventilated, or if somebody was in a coma, a lot of times the family members would say, like, can they hear me? Can they still hear me? And I said, absolutely, they can hear you. And I've been to conferences where I've heard patients talking about people when they seemed like they were out, and the way that people would talk around them. And either they would talk sort of very negatively and doom and gloom, and they would, that would affect their healing. And this one guy in particular said, I realized I had to step it up a little bit because no people were losing faith in me. And then, sometimes when family members would talk to them and talk about how much they love them and how, a lot of times when the patients would wake up or come out of off of the ventilator, they would tell their family members that they heard them. I think that's really important for people to know that no matter what, whether it's physically here on earth or up in heaven, that your love is felt and your thoughts are felt and heard.
Yes, yes. Very much so. Very much so. And the mind is a very powerful thing when you talk about that healing process. If that belief structure is a very powerful part of any healing process.
Yes. Again, reading the Marianne Williamson book, The Everyday Grace, she was talking about the importance of letting yourself be sad and really feeling those emotions. And a quote of hers says, our task is not to avoid painful emotions, but to transform it at its roots. We cannot do it if we don't go through the emotions authentically. So,
absolutely. You can hide from your emotions, but all you're going to do is, if you hide from your emotions, they come out in other ways. They may come out in physical illnesses. They may come out in addictions.
Yes.
They may come out in emotional breakdowns, but our emotions are there. And the best thing we can do is be honest and open with them. And I think that's an excellent piece of advice. Whatever you feel, you feel. Those feelings aren't right or wrong. They just are. But we do experience them, and we have them for a reason.
Yes. So I would say that's a part of grieving, too, is just exactly what you said. Allow yourself, without judgment, to feel the feelings you have. If it's anger, let it be. Let it come through. Let it come in and come out. Versus sort of, like you were saying, shoulds. Don't should yourself. And, I shouldn't feel this way. I shouldn't be angry. Or I shouldn't, feel alone. Or I shouldn't, all those shoulds sort of bog you down. And I think one of the important parts of grief from professionally and also personally is being allowing yourself to have those emotions without judgment and let them come through, whether you express them in a journal, whether you express them to a counselor, whether you express them to a friend or a loved one, but let those feelings come out. Otherwise, when you store them in and you hold them in, like you said, they will come out in another way.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And as long as you're not hurting yourself or others, there's even proactive ways. I mean, you talk about anger and, you know, there's a, go to a garage sale and buy some of the cheap dishes that you have there and put an old bed sheet, bed cloth against your garage door. Mm. And just, you know, throw the old dishes at the garage door if you need to.
Are you speaking from experience, Glenn? That's what you did.
Well,
I can do that whether I'm grieving or not. That's a parenting coping mechanism too, I think. One thing I wanted to say too was, as far as that piece of not, you know, especially when it comes to kids and helping your kids grieve, it is the piece about allowing those emotions to come. I was just talking to somebody who said that there was a family, a good friend of hers, who lost her husband. She has two small kids, and she's sort of stuck in that denial phase where she's wants everything to be happy and a party, and her son seems to echo that and sort of want to just be distracted and not deal with what's really going on. But the daughter is often sad and is often talking about missing her dad and is now acting out, physically acting out. And, you know, it's been 3 years, I think, and they haven't had counseling. They haven't had. So the daughter appears to need to let this out, and it's coming out, but it's coming out in sort of negative behaviors. You know, do you have any comments about that as far as with children and getting help for your kids, even if maybe they're not grieving the way you are, or help for the grieving process?
Well, I think there's two pieces. It's more than likely your children will not grieve the way you do again, because we all grieve differently. They have a different perspective on it, and I think that's important to recognize. Also, I would say there's nothing necessarily wrong with having moments where we do, do something else, where we go to have a party, where we go have fun, where life has those things, and to have those distractions, I think, is also a healthy part of the grief journey. To live in that all the time and to never address them, that's an issue.
Right.
But to have that and feel that's fine too. But yeah, I do think it's important to allow your children to feel what they're going to feel. I think also, you know, this is where being involved with different grief groups can also help too. You talk about in your community where there's a child who died, there's a wonderful organization. I'm on the board of directors of it, but it's the world's largest self-help group for grief, and it's called the Compassionate Friends. And they have an excellent aspect of the organization, which is designed to help siblings and allow siblings to have their journey. Because oftentimes siblings and the way they express their grief is very different than the way a parent might express their grief. And I think that's all true. And so I think it's important, like you say, to honor that. And don't be afraid to reach out for help. There's nothing wrong with taking the time to find others and to reach out for help or support, professional support, if that's what's needed. I think all of those things are very valuable through the grief journey, and don't be afraid to use them.
Absolutely. Well, when we get back from break, we're going to take a short break. And when we get back from break, I would like to kind of touch on, if possible, just some general tips on working through the grieving process. Just, I know it's different for everybody, but sort of a little recap of maybe top like some five to 10 things that we can do, which I will post up on my website, www.butterflyfamilywellness. So I encourage you to feel free to call in 866-472-5791 if you have any questions for Glenn or myself. Check out thegrieftoolbox.com for some more resources and to connect with Glenn. And when we get back from the break, we'll continue talking about sort of tips on how to handle grief, and we will touch on some types of grief I look forward to speaking with you all when we get back.
Follow us on Twitter at VoiceAmericaTRN. Get the lowdown on guests, new shows, and your favorites. That's VoiceAmericaTRN.
Spread your wings and fly into health with Butterfly Family Wellness. We offer customized healthy living plans for adults, children, schools, and communities. This includes various levels of personal coaching, holistic health counseling, cooking classes, workshops, Reiki healings, and attunements. Call 978-290-1938 or visit butterflyfamilywellness.com to take a personalized approach to family health and well-being and take control of your health. Visit butterflyfamilywellness.com or call 978-290-1938 today.
How many times have you heard this?
I'm sick and tired of feeling sick and tired.
You are what you eat.
I've tried every diet.
Diets don't work.
It's time to stop this kind of madness and start thinking and feeling empowered to change your health. Tune in to The Raw Truth with Chef Sharon Fraser. Join us weekly for thought-provoking conversations with world-renowned experts in the food, medical, holistic, sports medicine, chiropractic, and naturopathic health sciences. The Raw Truth airs live every Thursday at 8 a.m. Pacific Time, 11 a.m. Eastern on Voice America Health and Wellness.
Your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
You are listening to Spread Your Wings and Fly into Health. To reach Jennifer Tolo or her guest expert today, please call into our show at 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. Now, let's get back to the program.
Hi, and welcome back to Spread Your Wings and Fly into Health. I'm Jen Tolo, and I'm joined by Glenn Lord. And we were talking about just the phases of the grieving process. And Glenn had mentioned that, there are sort of set technical phases, which is can you recap those, Glenn?
Well, there's Kubler-Ross's stages of grief, but I think it's important, that people see those as a line, so they can
right.
see what's scary. But her five phases are denial, anger, bargaining, depression, acceptance. But it doesn't happen in a line like that. It's
right.
all you jump around from one to the other to the other to the other.
Right, right. And it's kind of being stuck in one that can be detrimental or can affect the forward progress, I guess, or the leading a purposeful life and having hope.
I would agree. Sometimes, though, the best thing to do is just sit in the mud and wallow with it, too. That can be an active part of the grieving process, is sometimes we just have to take the time to, as you said, feel what we're going to feel and be where we're going to be.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's okay to be wherever you're at for a period of time. That's and there isn't a judgment on that period of time.
Right.
But I do think it's important that sometimes the most valuable thing you can do is to just sit and be with yourself.
Right. But we did talk about the denial and sitting in denial, where you kind of just want to distract, denial and distraction, that it's okay once in a while, having periods where you're having a good time and you're laughing and you're moving forward, as long as you're not avoiding sort of the issue and the loss and pretending that it didn't happen. Sometimes that's when I see with clients of mine that's where sometimes people are getting stuck and they start to have sort of symptoms of illness and symptoms of things because they're really repressing all those feelings. They're not dealing with those feelings because it's too hard or it's too painful. And then, they sort of don't even want to look at help. I'm fine. I don't need help. I'm good. But, You can see it affecting them. You can see it affecting their health. Like you can see it affect different aspects of their life, especially one particular person I'm thinking of, their children. I can see it affecting the children. So, what would you say to people listening that know somebody like that or who maybe are sort of stuck in that denial phase? What would you recommend?
Well, I guess I would take a look at the word acceptance. Acceptance is part of the grief journey. But I think that maybe if we phrase it a little bit different, I think people can see it a lot better. Because acceptance implies that I'm okay with it, that I wanted it to be that way, that it was something that I acknowledge in a positive way. And I think if instead of accept, we acknowledge, we have to take and live in reality. But that reality can be is this wasn't the choice that I wanted to have made. I don't agree with this choice, but it still is reality. And I think if we can focus on that acknowledgement, then we can make honest choices around that acknowledgement. I think sometimes people feel like they're supposed to accept it and somehow they're supposed to be okay and good with the fact that it happened. And you can disagree with it, and I think that that's okay is to disagree with it. But there's still reality. You know, we have a choice. We can live in reality and deal with reality, or we can live in a not reality and deal with that too. But then we're not connecting with the rest of the world. The reality is what it is, and we have to be part of that.
Yeah. I had mentioned to you at the break that I was reading that book by Scarlett Lewis, Nurturing Healing Love. And in one part, she was talking about when the social worker came to talk to her, the social worker said to her, "It will never get better." And she said, "You know, how dare she set negative limits on my healing process? Even though I couldn't choose what happened to me and my son Jesse, I could choose the way I reacted. I needed to have hope." So, you know, that's sort of, you know, I think is a big thing is sort of knowing that, you know, it is your process, but you will have good days, you will have bad days, but your bad days will be lesser, you know, and your good days will be better. And you know, it's important to have hope and purpose and feel like, you know, maybe using a project or like Scarlett wrote this book, trying to help people and learn to forgive and that through love and through hope, we can heal.
Hope is really a part of the grief journey. And if you don't have hope, lean on the hope of those who are further down the road. Because as you point out, you know, it is our choice what we choose to do with what happens to us. Mm-hmm. We are given that choice. And I think sometimes people get stuck because the choice they want is for their loved one to be back with them. Mm-hmm. We're given choices that have reality limits on them. We at this point, we can't bring people back from the dead. Once they're dead, they're dead. Mm-hmm. But we can, how we choose to do with that, how we choose to incorporate them into our lives, what we choose to feel with that, you know, having joy and hope and all of those things are a real reality of the grief journey.
Absolutely. So I was jotting down a couple of things while we were talking as far as what I would think are some tips on how to either help a loved one or how to go through the grief process or and coping. One of the things that I personally think is huge is use support. You know, really don't be alone and sort of isolate yourself, but don't be afraid to ask for help and to have somebody with you. I know that this mom of the boy that died in our town stayed at another friend's of mine house because she didn't want to be alone. And I think that that's huge and the community rallying around them. And I do understand that there are some people that just need a little space. But I think that being alone, sometimes we can spiral into a dark place. And I think just knowing that there are people, living people around you that are there to help you, support you, be there for you, even in silence, I think is important. Would you agree?
I think that's very, very true. And I think, you know, if you have people in your life who are suffering with grief at this point in time, a lot of times it's those practical things that can both allow them, you know, to have that opportunity. You know, if they have children, go offer to babysit for them. Give them a chance to go to the support meetings that they need to, or a chance to go be alone, because alone can be part of the grief journey too, and they might not even have any alone time if they're actively dealing with you know, their children or something of that nature.
Yeah.
Just simple mundane tasks can be overwhelming. You know, go over and just, you know, go and you know, pick up groceries for them, or go, you know, vacuum their house for them. Some of the pieces of life that really are essential, but there just isn't the energy to accomplish those tasks. And sometimes just be willing to sit, just to sit and recognize that there isn't an answer. I think all too often We want to tell the individual the answer to this grief process. And sometimes the best thing is just to sit with them, hold their hand, hug them, let them cry, cry with them, listen to them. And that can be, you know, really a big part of this too.
Yeah, I remember, and again, this is, as you had mentioned to me before, a different kind of grief, but I remember when my son was diagnosed with leukemia, my friend started this Lots of Helping Hands. It's a website that people can sign up to bring meals. People can, you know, sign up for different things. They can email me messages and my husband messages. And it was a place for me to be able to do updates to sort of the group. So it was it's a great resource, at least it was when, you know, 6 years ago, 7 years ago when I was going through this. but I remember there were a lot of people. Now, granted, I am different than you know, somebody else, but there were a lot of people that wanted to sort of take over my life for me. Like, I remember literally coming home one day, and my mother was here with my other children, and she had given my laundry out to three different people to do, because they wanted to help. But I kept thinking, you know, my bras are floating around Essex right now. My underwear is all over Essex right now. I'm not really okay with this. Or people that said, okay, I've signed up your kids for this and for that, and I'll do this and I'll do that. And I thought, you know what? I actually need to be a part of their lives, and I need to do some of those mundane things to remind me that I'm still living and I'm still part of this process. So that for me was important, to actually do some of those things instead of having people take over my life. And I know, as well-intentioned as everybody was, it was important for me to just have a little bit of control of some things.
Absolutely. And that's where the listening comes in, to really have the courage to talk with the individual and find out what they're hearing. But one of the worst things people say, you know, call me if there's anything you need. Well, I think oftentimes when people are grieving, they don't even know what they need. And I think if people could come up and make suggestions, and maybe they aren't interested. To your point, this wasn't what you wanted, but had someone come to you and said, you know, would you like to have me do your laundry? Your answer may well have been no, mm-hmm. but you may not have thought to have someone do your laundry if someone weren't to come up and make that practical suggestion. So I think sometimes when we talk to people, if we talk those gross generalities, it becomes difficult for the grieving individual to even figure out what they do need.
Right. We're wrapping up our show. I will read to you what I sort of wrote down as sort of five tips, and you can let me know if you agree. But one was the using a support, be it a group, a counselor, friends, family. Number two would be working to accept the situation, and, you know, grasping and understanding the situation. Number three would be finding a purpose, whether it's a project or a message or a lesson or something that you can sort of continue to work towards and move forward to help you continue living and purposeful living. Number four, allowing feelings to come, be them negative or positive, without judgment. Number five would be taking time to realize what your needs are and then looking for places to get what you need.
I would modify your two and three slightly, but other than that, I would agree with them. I would change the word accept to acknowledge. Although accept is the technical term, I do think people get stuck with that, and I do think mm-hmm. acknowledge is a more accurate word. Mm-hmm. And with purpose, I think oftentimes if we can find a purpose that helps us in some way honor our loved one, and that doesn't have to be something monumental. You can honor mm-hmm. your loved one by, you know, putting food on the table and keeping your family fed. Or you could do something as large as start mad. I mean, there's a million ways to honor your loved one. But I think if that purpose can somehow involve honoring your loved one, I think that also helps a lot in the journey.
Absolutely. And then, you know, my show next week is going to be on working with kids with special needs, parenting a child with special needs. So just touching briefly, we have 2 minutes until we're closing. Is there the kind of grieving as far as losing sort of what you thought your reality was, and then
franchise grief, that loss of a dream is a very real grief, and I think that's something for people to acknowledge and recognize. When you have a special needs child, you may or may not have the many of the things you thought you were going to experience with your child. Your child may or may not ever get married. They may or may not ever have children of their own. They may or may not ever move out. I mean, there's so many different pieces of the what you had expected. So these dreams that you had for your future did die. And grief is the normal and natural reaction to the loss of any kind. And you've had a loss here that is very, very real. And honor that loss as part of the journey. To your point, there's going to be many practical realities that have to be done, but there's still emotional realities that are very real grief realities.
Absolutely. Well, Glenn, thank you so much for joining me on the show. I will post up on my website, www.butterflyfamilywellness, these tips, five things to think about. And I will have a link to the grief toolbox as well. Again, I encourage you to look on and connect through that, both websites for both Glenn and I. Glenn, thank you very much for being on the show.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Absolutely. And I want to thank all the listeners today. I invite you again to go onto the websites and connect and to check out this blog, whether it's for you or for a loved one. Hopefully this can help. And again, realizing that the grieving process is truly an individual, unique one, and one size does not fit all. Next week, we will be discussing the kind of that grieving process as far as being a parent to a special needs child. Tune in next week as we help you spread your wings and fly into health. Be well, everyone.
Thank you again for joining us this week for Spread Your Wings and Fly into Health. Jennifer Tolo invites you to listen again next Tuesday morning at 8 a.m. Pacific Time, 11 a.m. Eastern Time for another edition on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. Have a healthy week.